Hello and welcome to the Press Start Podcast. Press Start Australia. Oh, I'm going to start again.
Yes!
I've got nervous with Ewan in the room. Hello and welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Brody, again, for some reason, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Ewan.
Is James videoing this moment?
I took a memento.
A memorial.
You know,
photo.
We're recording this whole thing.
Yeah, this is live to the people.
I understand. Life still happens, even when we record.
Anyway, Ewan is here.
Anyway,
sorry,
yes.
Brody, I threw you right off.
Yeah.
Say hello, Ewan. Fuck.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Okay, hello. Back by popular demand, that's right, we read the YouTube comments. It's Harry, Philwood1788. I hope you're happy.
Thanks for that one guy.
The one guy who asked for Harry back,
just
he is here.
We've all been saying it, really.
And back with us is also James.
Hello, how are you?
Hello. So on the show today, we're going to talk
how
about...
how are
you? Oh, sorry, I'm great. We'll get to that. There's plenty of time to know how I am. On the show today...
Brody, we're just actively sabotaging you.
Yeah.
I was genuinely interested in how he was.
On the show today, we're going to talk about Nintendo Switch 2 likely going to sell like hotcakes, FBC Firebreak's release date making for a busy, busy June, Sydney Sweeney bringing her assets in acting to Split Fiction, and PlayStation and EB Games being at the opposite ends of game preservation spectrums, kind of. But first, James, as we alluded to last week, you've just returned from a whirlwind trip to Japan to spend some time playing Death Stranding 2 at Kojima Productions, although we'll need to wait a little bit longer to talk about the game itself. What can you talk about? How is the experience in general going to that studio of all studios?
Yeah, I can confirm I was there.
That's awesome.
That's the extent of it.
Next topic.
I weren't AI.
Yeah, I played... Yeah, it wasn't a... Anyway, yeah, it was interesting to see a peek behind the curtain, if you will. Kojima has many curtains, as I'm sure we all know. So
he's got a sniper trained on you right now as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'm out my window,
sweating.
I'm scared. So Japan was great. Again, it's always nice to be in Japan.
Is that three times
back
in a year for you?
That is three times in the span of 12 months. Like,
wow.
And
wow.
I've got the same passport page stamped too, so like it's looking good. I need
are
to
they
get
getting sus at immigration yet? And they're like, why are you back here again?
I had genuine concerns about that because like I've been watching a lot of border security when I was playing Assassins. So like just as in the background. So I was like, oh, they're going to think I'm like muling or I don't know. But all I'm doing is just smuggling, like, gummies.
That is such
it sounds,
a fine
now that I've
pairing,
said that out loud.
It's like a fine wine with a steak, border security and Assassin's Creed.
Great shout-out.
I don't know. They're both things you can, like, space out of, so they go well together when you've got nothing else to do. But what was your question? I don't know. Like, I think, yeah, it was interesting. There's, like, a lot, obviously, that I want to talk about.
Of course.
But I can't yet. So I will just say for now, stay tuned, I guess. It's actually like a week away, I think.
Yeah,
a little further, maybe.
From what I heard, it was like around the 8th or 9th. So
May 8th, I'm pretty sure. So we'll have to like work out the recording on that front.
What about in the studio space? Like, tell us about the studio, like being in.
I just don't know if I'm meant to yet. Like, I need to. Yeah, like, I think we should wait.
If you
want
to see James in the studio space, there's a photo online that you can
find.
There is
a photo of me in
allegedly
the Lumens room, which is the big the big room that everyone stood in. Nicolas Cage, Tim Chalamet, James Berridge, all the greats.
The big three, as they call them.
The big three, yeah.
Like the Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely.
He saved the best for last.
Yeah,
absolutely. So it's really interesting to see how he has like full creative control of pretty much every aspect of his games. I will say that, but I'm just really scared of saying the
awesome
thing.
No, we'll leave it there.
Yeah,
okay.
But that's a scintillating tease for what's to come.
I hope we get to talk about it one day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll talk about it next time for sure.
So we'll hear about that next week. And before we move into the first topic, I'd like to just do a little bit of a round table because we did speak about it last week with Harry's review. But has anyone played this Clair Obscur Expedition 33 game?
Yes. So
holy moly.
Can I keep talking or should someone else have a turn?
Please.
No, go for it.
Ewan, what are you doing?
Anyway. I know. I do want to get to it, but I've not played anything all weekend. I'm sorry.
I got back on Saturday night at like 11 PM midnight ish.
Have
like
you finished it already?
No, I had four hours sleep. It was like felt like 18 hours of travel, and I could have gone to bed, but instead I booted Clair Obscur, and yeah, pretty incredible.
The right thing to do.
I reckon. Like it's. I'm not gonna say like it's revived. I'm seeing a lot of people saying like, oh, like the genre was dead, and I feel like that's like categorically incorrect, right? But like This is obviously a different style of turn-based game. But I think it's great. I think there's like, I can't really see much wrong with it yet. There's like mini things, like the mini map, but I meant to say small things. But that's like the only thing I can really find wrong with it is like, I wish I had a mini map when you're like exploring, and I feel like that's maybe intentional. But the way the game like kind of flips turn-based combat on its head and makes it so like active and fast-paced. I did listen to the episode that you guys did last week, and I like completely agree. I think if you're not a turn-based person, this might be the game that will get you into them, because it does just feel so
it's very snappy.
What's the word? So snappy and like so satisfying, like endlessly like satisfying. And I think it's always a good sign that, you know, even when I was playing and I kind of wanted to go and see the story, because the story and the writing is also incredible, I would still just want to go back to the battles and just fight them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't avoid, actively avoid battles, which I feel like I do a lot for a lot of RPGs, especially JRPGs.
And I think with the Pictos and Luminas system, like, they give you good reason to, like, want to keep fighting and stuff like that as well. So I think that's very clever. And what you're saying is that Shannon just shouldn't be a little bitch and he should just give this a try.
Well, I think Shannon and Ewan, like, when I was playing this, I was like, why aren't they fucking playing
like
this?
Ewan, like, it's up his street to a degree. Like, he does play RPGs.
I think narratively it's very up
I am the record
street.
For saying I hearn like, turn-based games, but then playing the Final Fantasy VII remakes, like,
they're
I spend all the time. No, but, like, it's kind of, like, one foot in the door that's, like, what, active turn-based system or whatever
it's
called?
Yeah.
It's a very distant
door.
I find myself just, like, sweating over the decisions, like, in those menus. I'm like, I'm basically playing a turn-based game at this point in time, so I should just get over it. But I do hate this game's very existence, Brody. And that's
that?
Because I counterpicked it in fantasy.
You're just me 3 months from now when Donkey Kong Bonanza comes out.
Yeah.
I just
thought like this
pulse.
Game had like a first time release from a studio. Like this A-list kind of talent to it. It just like had all of the kind of classic hallmarks of a game that's gonna come out and ultimately not live up to expectations, and
it proved me
very wrong.
It was giving Immortals of Avium vibes for a while, but then it it's just really good. So well done to Sam. I think I read today it's a million copies in 3 days.
Nuts.
So
incredible.
And that excludes Game Pass. So
I think it's good.
Numbers have been nuts.
I think it's good though, because there's a lot of chatter online about how people like are kind of being a little bit more discriminatory because they didn't play, say, Metaphor or Persona, because obviously they're like Japanese games, very like anime style, but I think there is something to be said about how this game having the style that it has kind of gets people in that probably would, like, I don't think Shannon would ever play a Metaphor or a Persona, but like I genuinely think he would try Clair Obscur.
Harry said it well last week, it's like an RPG without the weebisms.
Yes. Sorry.
But, I mean, you could say the same thing about Baldur's Gate, right? Like, that's
I suppose
true, but
Baldur's
Gate,
maybe there's a bit of weebiness.
Baldur's Gate is very dense.
No,
turn-based are very different to, you know, like a CRPG. Like, even though they have turn-based combat, I think the core of it is so fundamentally different.
But Baldur's Gate is what, like 80 hours at minimum. Like, it's a massive undertaking, and like Clair Obscur apparently is what, like 15 to 30 hours. So like, I feel like it's a lot more manageable. So I think it's doing all the right things. It would have to shit the bed like catastrophically for me to like not consider it in maybe my top three this year. Yeah. So
wow. High praise.
Yeah. I'm only 7 hours in, I think. But yeah, just really enjoying it.
Wonderful. Well, Ewan, you put it on your list. You must try it. That is an order. But moving right along.
Blueprints first.
No, that's true. I'm stuck in that loop as well. So, but moving right along, things are looking good for Nintendo as we edge closer to the Switch 2 launch in June. There's a demand for this thing that is practically unbelievable. Pre-orders have sold out at all major retailers in the US. Japan are going to fall well short. I think they're doing the lottery thing, and the registered interest far outweighs what their stock availability is. So they've basically apologized ahead of time to people who may not get one. Oddly enough, we've had no problems here at all. Like, it's still readily available at all retailers practically. Can pre-order one still. Ewan, based on what we know, do you think the Switch 2 is going to be the biggest hardware launch of all time? For reference, the first Switch in its first year sold about 17.8 million. However, that is still well short of the PlayStation 2, which in its first year did almost 40 million units, which is crazy.
I can't see it surpassing
in this economy. That's not happening.
Yeah. In this economy, like, I think the PS2, like, part of the success of that console, right, was, like, the fact that it was quite, like, an affordable DVD player in its time. Like, I don't know how true that is, but... Yeah, I don't think... I just can't see the Switch 2 surpassing in its first year. I think it would have to be the percentage of Switch owners that are kind of super keen for this upgrade that would have to kind of all come in over a major way, and I just don't know if that equates to 40 million plus. Like, what's the total install base of the Switch currently, right? It's like, I wanted to say it was like 120?
I was going
to
say 130 at a guess, yeah.
130. Yeah, so we're talking about like a third of all current Switch owners deciding to make the upgrade in a year, and I just struggle to see that happening. Particularly when like a big kind of driver of the console was like Animal Crossing and COVID, that kind of thing. True. I just don't think we're going to see the same rush, but then I've been very surprised with these pre-order numbers, particularly with based on like how slow it's been out of the gate in Australia. And I don't know if that's because like maybe we've got a kind of like higher allocation of stock than is kind of right proportionally to our market. I don't know if there's like a weird quirk to it like that, but yeah, to your point, Brody, like it's readily available everywhere else, but in Japan and the US in particular, it seems to be disappearing like hotcakes.
Are they region locked, these consoles? Because as I say, people should just jump on JB Hi-Fi and just grab one.
I did wonder that. I maybe wondered that's why James would be going to Japan so much. He's secretly kind of shipping pre-orders.
There is greasing palms to work out who to
Japanese version that's language locked. That is like substantially cheaper than
because the yen's so shit.
Because the yen is so bad. Yeah, that's literally the only reason. It's really, really cheap, though. It works out to be, I think, like a little over 300 Australian or something. But it's exclusively Japanese.
Really?
Yeah, it's that's really, really cheap.
I need to James doesn't believe community know.
He doesn't believe it, no.
I just want a community know you. wait. Nah, it's about 500 Australian.
Oh, okay. Which is still $200 cheaper.
Yeah, that's $300 Perth dollars.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's worth
$200 behind.
Yeah, well...
James, why do you think it is that Australia has been seemingly spared from this launch window turmoil? It seems highly irregular, I feel.
I don't know.
Compelling. Rich.
Wired. I suspect maybe... I don't know. I feel like everyone I know has ordered one. Maybe like...
Good operations. Yeah, they've got the right amount of consoles for the right.
I think it might be one of you was saying, I spaced out, but one of you was saying that like the market like is comparative. Like we probably got all the same rough allocations, but our market is smaller, maybe. Mm. So like it's not selling as quick. I did notice EB, if you guys remember on day one, like they sold out of the standalone console, but now that's back. So I don't know if we just got more in Australia.
I wondered about that.
I thought it had been assumed that that may have been just like the website struggling. But
it took them 3 weeks to fix that one SKU, so I don't know if that was... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were being cautious. I was like, I don't know what the goal is. I'm glad. I love that we did ours our way. When I was away last week, all the American guys had to take a break to go and try and pre-order their Switches, and I think not many of them were successful, so...
I do wonder if the delay is a factor. Like, maybe it just kind of created this... a build-up around it. Yeah, there's kind of people sat with it, were able to kind of take stock of their savings a little bit. There was a kind of just, like, build-up and hype, and maybe with that, a bit of attention that they were going to sell out, so everyone just kind of pounced on it a bit quicker. Whereas, you know, the fact that pre-orders went live overnight in Australia... Like, we put our pre-orders up, what, like 3:30 in the morning or something like that? Yeah. Put them in. So maybe like people woke up that morning, saw the pre-orders were still available, thought, oh, you know what? I maybe don't need to rush into this purchase right now. It doesn't look like it's moving all that quickly. And there's just like a different kind of like, I don't know, psyche to the Australian market. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know.
I do think maybe, like, we've talked about this before, but the price, people do seem to be really hung up on the price. Like, it, I don't,
yeah.
I feel like that could be an issue maybe in Australia. But then, I don't know, America, things are worse, right? And it's selling out, so it's hard to, I don't know.
Yeah, we spoke about that a little bit throughout the week. It's like, inflation is impacting kind of people all around the world. Like, I know in the UK, it's like really bad based on what I've heard from the US too. It's a similar sort of situation. And I think everywhere is kind of in the same boat of like wages not rising to kind of match rising costs of everything. So it's making it difficult to kind of justify a big purchase like this. But yeah, I'd kind of thought that all feels like a pretty even keel the world over. I wouldn't have thought that's like a unique Australian situation. But I'm no economist, Brody.
No,
none of us are.
And so whether they're going to be upfront with, I guess, sales numbers in the first week, month, year, whatever it is, it remains to be seen. But I'd like all of us here to have a bit of a nearest to pin contest. Prize to be determined, you know, whether I'll buy a pizza for the winner or something like that. If I win, I'll buy myself two. For basically units sold for the first week. So
first week,
yeah, let's go first week because I feel like they do advertise that.
Release those numbers.
No, really? I did a Google. They have done so in the past for other consoles.
Okay.
So, Ewan, what do you think it might do in the first week, knowing what you know about the demand? Like 2.2 million interested in Japan, not gonna be able to fulfill all of those.
Yeah. How many did I say they weren't gonna do it here? 40 million. Yes.
Extrapolate that. Break the math down.
Yeah. I reckon they sell like 15
million in a week.
No, 10. Let me walk it back. You've already convinced me. Sorry.
I'm probably going to be somewhere around, I think the first Switch did like 4 point something in its first week. So I'm leaning more towards somewhere around 5.
Hang on, you've done the research. I'm flying blind here.
Fucking Google it, mate. James,
don't you fly blind? Are we recording this? Like, not the podcast, but like the answers.
Yeah, to a degree. I'll revert back to it at one point.
Then it's important. I'm going to go 8.
8 million. Okay.
Yeah. It's a nice round number physically.
Ewan, just so you know, in its first month, the first Switch apparently sold about 2.74 million units, which doesn't seem like that much.
No, really? But stock was a big issue. I feel like stock was not going to be as much of an issue this time.
Yeah, they did it in waves in Australia.
I guess I am assuming that, like, yeah, 2.2 million in Japan, they're not going to sell that because they've said that they can't.
That was so also a Nintendo coming off the Wii U as well, though. So
yeah,
people were I guess, a little more hesitant or gun-shy to go in.
The market is different now, too.
I'm doubling down. I'm sticking with the 10.
10. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what we've all said. Harry, have you said an answer yet?
This is first month, you said, sorry?
First week.
I
think 10 is wild, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think 10's quite high. I'm going to say first week. I reckon 2.5 mil.
2.5?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think you've come in at 2.5. James, did you say 4?
8.
I said 8.
Okay, so then I've gone 5.1. You've gone 8. Ewan's gone 10. So
I just want to say, like, my answer is not. I'm not. I just guessed it. I'm not thinking about it.
That's okay.
Like, I'm not factoring in anything whatsoever.
I'm probably not actually going to buy a pizza. So,
if it's 8, I'm gonna
chase you up.
Gonna hold me to it. Yeah, well, what I might buy is FBC Firebreak, which this week has had its release date revealed. Remedy Entertainment announced that their upcoming shooter set within the Control universe will officially launch on June 17th. It's going to come to PC, PS5, Xbox Series X and S. I believe it's expected, though not confirmed, to launch at around $40 US, meaning it'll probably likely limp in here probably at around $60. Harry, you got to preview this game a month or so ago, I believe.
Yeah.
Is this one that's still big on your radar when you consider the year that we're sort of looking at here?
Yeah, I am interested. I think the price point is pretty attractive. They did confirm in that preview that it was going to be not a full price title, so I would probably expect around the $60 Australian dollar mark. Yeah, the preview was good. I think the game is going in a direction that people won't expect, but will probably be quite interested in. They're almost like incorporating MSim elements, but it's a multiplayer game. So Remedy seems to be very big on creating moments that you could only have within the runs that you do with your friends. So I think conceptually it sounds really strong. My biggest concern with it coming out of the preview is that it seems like it's going to be pretty lean on launch in terms of content. So whether or not it holds people over for its live service roadmap, which they have said, I believe some maps are going to be free and some won't be. There might be some paid stuff. Really? I think so. I could be mixing that with something else.
Have they actually called this live service?
It is. It does have a roadmap.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm interested in checking it out at the very least, but I will be curious to see how it goes when it launches.
Mm. Yeah. James, in a year where, I guess, quasi-live service co-op multiplayer things can be priced any number of ways, obviously with Marathon being premium priced, like we know that, we don't know what it is, the Skate reboot that's coming out that's going to be free to play apparently, so like you've got all sorts of games on different ends of the spectrum. How does something around $60 grab you as far as this goes? Obviously, I feel like a lot of that is going to come down to pedigree and how much trust you've got in Remedy, I suppose.
I mean, it's on all the subs, right?
That is true as well.
So I don't know. I would probably buy it because I will do anything for Remedy at this point.
They're going to say for money.
Yeah, that too. If anyone wants to hit me up, for money. Sponsorship deal. Yeah, absolutely. I've got an eggplant on my mic. I'll rent this space out.
Only jams.
Yeah, only jams. That's good. I would pay that, sure. I'm as an example, I feel like if Bungie can't even nail like a games as a service, like how I'm feeling with Marathon at the moment, like what hope does Remedy have? But I think if there's an interesting or different enough take on it, it could still be good. So yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Ewan, how are you feeling about FBC Firebreak? Cool. Is it on your list also?
Yeah, like James, Remedy have kind of earned, I guess, that that trust from me now, that no matter what they do, I'm gonna kind of give it a
You'll
go.
Be seated.
And realistically, like I'm the kind of the multiplayer guy in this group, right? Like I love kind of particularly kind of an experience where I can kind of dive in cooperatively with my mates. So this kind of speaks to me in all of those levels. I'm glad it's not kind of coming out at the same time as Marathon, because I could see it kind of jostling for my attention if it were, because that's another game I'm very excited for. But yeah, I think like given it's kind of plays into the controls sort of Alan Wake universe, Remedy obviously being attached to it. I'm really excited for it. And I'm pleased with the kind of price point too. I'm very much not in the camp that expects these games to be free to play, and almost I'd kind of rather they weren't. I think like the Helldivers kind of model of like that entry price with the kind of paid battle passes that you can kind of complete at your own pace is really kind of my preferred way to go about it. It doesn't kind of beat you over the head with any of the microtransactions, but if you're there kind of playing it a year or two later and you want kind of more progression out of it, it's there as an option. So I hope they kind of learn from that model of game. But yeah, I'm really kind of keen for it, really excited for it.
Sorry, just to clarify, all post-launch content is free for it. So it's just cosmetics and...
Right.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Good. Yeah, that sounds reasonable then, if it's going to be a game that
worry
lasts over a year or something.
I feel like Remedy is quite small comparatively to like a lot of devs, right? And they've already got like Max Payne and Control 2 on the go. Like,
yeah. Can you afford to take a risk?
Are they stretching themselves like too thin, and they've got to keep working on this for a bit after it launches, obviously, to keep all that content coming? So
they did say during the preview that like they sort of allude, I mean, and obviously this isn't in like concrete writing or anything, but they sort of alluded to the fact that how long it's going to last is really going to depend on launch reception. So, you know, maybe if it doesn't go so well, the runway is not going to be super long for it, but I guess we'll see.
I guess if like it has a clear end decided already, and then it just gets extended for fun after that, that works for me too. I guess, I feel like Control's always kind of had that. It could be like X-Files, right? Where you have like one episode where it's like one kind of weird phenomena, and then you like move on to the next one. But yeah, we'll see.
And realistically, that's like all I want from it. Like, we've spoken about it before, but I don't need a multiplayer game that I play forevermore. Like, I'm very content with a multiplayer game that is my jam for 2-3 months, and then I put it down and then eagerly await a sequel in 5 years' time or whatever. Yeah. Like, that is fine with me. That's my Helldivers 2 experience. Like, I played the shit out of that game for 6 months, maybe not even, and then haven't gone back to it since, which isn't, like, for lack of interest. Other things have come out, but yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, particularly when you're paying kind of an entry fee for the game. I think that works for the developer, and I'm still getting enough value out of it for the price of entry, from the perspective of a gamer. So yeah, if it comes out and it's good fun and I get a couple of months out of it, stoked. I was denied that with Concord.
you got a couple of good weeks at least. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Marathon, which is a game that this game is not competing against, but what's daunting are the games that it is competing against. And June at this stage is fucking stacked. So obviously we've got everything that's all things Nintendo Switch, and its launch lineup, obviously. June Awakening for the little MMO gremlins like I'm fixing to be. Mind's Eye, like that one that's coming out that's like a GDA sort of game. The Alters, this now, Rematch, which I'm super stoked on from Slow Clap, and Death Stranding 2, of course. So, I mean, June is shaping up to be a busy, busy month. Like, I guess the concern, they must be confident to, I guess, slot it in knowing that all that stuff's already there. So,
yeah.
I just fear that that's this year. Like, this year feels stacked. Like, I don't know. We started the show talking about Clair Obscur. I feel like that's kind of the game I'm trying to go, where do I kind of get the time for this in, because I want to install Oblivion Remastered and play a bit of that. I'm
still not in June.
Blueprints and Assassin's Creed Shadows takes forever to play. So I don't know. I just worry that this year is going to be that constant battle.
It's going to be an interesting one for Game of the Year, because I think our shortlists are not going to be so short. I don't have a good segue for this, so let's just move right along.
You're doing so well.
Sydney Sweeney has been cast in the Split Fiction film adaptation. In perhaps the most left-field news of the week, Sydney Sweeney is attached to both co-produce and co-lead the in-development film adaptation of Split Fiction, which obviously came out this year via Hazelight and EA. It's unknown at this point which role out of Zoe and Mio that Sweeney will be taking on. However, the film is going to be helmed by John M. Chu, who's fresh from directing both Wicked and its upcoming sequel. So, not a bad director there. Like, Wicked has been well received, though I've not watched it at all. James, are you excited for the Queen of Sween to penetrate the world of video game film adaptations? Now, it's not a video game, but she's also attached to the Gundam film that's coming out, the live action one. So she's getting into that pop culture groove, it would seem.
She's all right, I guess. She was good in Immaculate. I haven't watched Euphoria. From what I understand, though, Split Fiction, I feel like there's almost a resounding agreement that the writing and the story isn't that great compared to It Takes Two. So, like, how do you feel that would translate to a film? Do you think it works better as a film?
Well, that's what I was going to throw to Ewan, something in that vein.
Dropped
the head off.
Ewan, a common critique of Split Fiction surrounded its rather cliche and derivative narrative. Are you concerned at all about how that might translate to film?
It's 2 weeks in a row. Brody's notes have been shafted.
No, I genuinely...
He's listening to last week when Shannon did the same thing, stomping on my segue, and he thought, you know what? I'm leaving with something. I'm going to have that.
I think it can translate. Oh, yeah, you can answer your own question.
No, I was going to say, further to the point, I feel like in a world where Minecraft can almost crack $1 billion, it doesn't matter. Like, because I mean, it's not like that story's going to have story coming out the wazoo, as long as it's a bit of fun. Because I think if you find the fun in a Split Fiction movie, which obviously the game had plenty of, then I know your story might not be that pivotal.
Yeah. Without offending writers or aspiring writers the world over, I sort of feel like the shtick of Split Fiction was that they are like aspiring writers and unpublished novelists, a kind of like, and like all of the material that you kind of play through in the game is like unrealized projects and ideas and stuff, right? Like, I don't think it would be I thought the story of it was quite good, and kind of picking apart the process of storytelling was kind of what was being discussed in the game. Mm. You know, aside from like all of the kind of character relationships and the arcs that each character kind of go on as well. But yeah, I think it was pretty true to what It Takes Two did in terms of like beating you over the head with its kind of themes and messages. And it's appealing to kids at the same time it is adults, right? So I think it has to be a little bit more obvious in that. And I kind of see the film walking a similar sort of tightrope, I suppose, in terms of a balancing act. But I don't think that holds the movie back in any way, or kind of like, I don't know, works against it. I think there's every chance that this film could shape up to be really quite good. And I hope she's playing...
She's Zoe. She's got to be Zoe.
100%. Yeah, I think she suits, not just because the character is blonde. Yeah. Which is the obvious connection to make, I guess. But I feel like she kind of just suits that more like upbeat, kind of optimistic sort of outlook. I don't know who I'd kind of cast as Mio, but I feel like you need someone with like a bit more of like an edge, or like sort of a more kind of like gothy sort of style to her than Sydney Sweeney necessarily brings.
Who?
Rachel Zegler.
Oh, yes. I was trying to think of works. Who I thought of the other day. Like, I heard someone on a podcast today say Jenny Ortega, and I was I had a better idea the other day.
That seems kind of obvious, yeah.
Rachel Zegler needs a win, so yeah. This is maybe for her.
Honestly, even Isabel Merced, I think, is it, from the new from season, the playing Dina in The Last of Us, I reckon she would be quite good. But yeah, who knows?
From Alien Romulus as well. I didn't realize until much after the fact that she was in that. Enjoying her performance this season. It's good. Harry, do you think you'd be seated opening night for a Split Fiction film?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Really, really, really loved the game. Fantastic game. But so much of that was from the surprise and the shock of the moments and the mechanics that it throws at you. So I think it's really, really difficult to translate that to like film, but I guess we'll see. I think it could definitely be, it definitely has potential, but yeah, I would want to see how they get those core highlight moments across to,
I was just thinking about that. I'd like to know what sort of budget this thing would have. Like, it's going to be green screen central as they're like
like, think about the Hydra and stuff, and like, are they going to turn into hot dogs? Maybe.
It remains to be seen. Will this film ever get made? Remains
probably
to be seen.
Not.
And if the Minecraft movie is anything to go by, the weirder it gets, the better its chances at the being in the box office will be.
You think they'll have?
Has anyone else seen that movie besides me yet? No. I desperately want to talk about it with someone that isn't 12 years old.
Chicken jockey.
Are you speaking to a lot of 12-year-olds about it, or what's?
I feel like I'm going to have to, but I just don't know if they're necessarily picking the film apart with the sort of.
And where are you going to go
find
them?
Intellect I would want to.
Let's not try and get Ewan sat down with Chris Hansen or anything like that. moving. Oh, that was lost on Ewan, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
Chris Hansen. Right. Moving right along. Although it doesn't trouble us necessarily in the land of Oz, PlayStation announced during the week that a few of their first-party titles, among a few heavy hitters like GTA 5, would be exiting their PlayStation Plus service. The games are Resistance Fall of Man. I think Ewan's just Googled who Chris Hansen is. Resistance Fall of Man, Resistance 2, and Infamous Second Son. Again, not an issue for us. They were basically only available through the streaming component of the service, which isn't available here, obviously. But it's worth noting that there'll be no way now to access these particular titles on modern consoles. Harry, why do you expect PlayStation has decided to remove these games specifically? It seems a strange choice, unless maybe there's a few remasters afoot coming out, perhaps, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. It does seem odd. I think GTA is, pretty obvious that, 6 is coming out, and they, like, publishers, developers have a tendency to remove predecessors
just
for games.
On that, go ahead, GTA 5 steps in and out of
all
both
the time.
Game Pass all the time. So, like, I don't think that's unusual.
In terms of the Sony titles, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, obviously, Sucker Punch have Ghosts coming out this year, so maybe that has something to do with it. It would be weird to get a Second Son remaster, given that game came out in like 2014 or something, 2015. So
it have still you seen feels... The Last of Us Part 2?
Well, this is true. Yeah, nothing's going to stop them, is it? But yeah, Resistance seems weird as well. If it is just for the sake of cutting the catalog down, that's a huge bummer because, yeah, game preservation is something that is not talked about or maintained enough.
Yeah. James, what do you think this does for PlayStation Plus in terms of like consumer value when you consider like Xbox Game Pass has all their first party titles in their day and date and they don't ever really seem to leave the service?
To community note you there, Forza does leave from time to time. But I don't see a reason for this to leave. Like, I know Forza's licensing and all that jazz, right? But what's the resistance that's like... I feel like when you subscribe to a platform, right, like the owner of that platform, all of their products should be there. 100%. Although Netflix has done it in the past, I guess they've taken complete series off.
If you're like, what are you referring to though? Is like the ones that are now owned by Disney?
No. This is like so random, but like as an example, Netflix made and produced Hemlock Grove, with Bill Skarsgård and stuff, and that was 3 seasons and it was pretty okay, and that's just completely gone now.
So, yeah, but I'd argue that's not okay either. Like,
what do you know? I don't either. That's what I'm saying. Like, so yeah,
they're both like, as evil as each other.
It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, why do you have to just take this random PS3 game off the service unless there's something coming? And like, Sony loves a remaster at the moment. They're throwing whatever will stick.
Has been a few rumors regarding, I guess, Resistance remaster collections and stuff like that. So I guess that's...
Anyone have any insights as to if Until Dawn or Days Gone are still available on the services? Like, couldn't Horizon?
I see what you're saying. Like, ahead of those,
They're like all in remaster.
I'm pretty sure Days Gone is still on there. One of my friends plays that through the PS Plus collection, so...
I really hope the answer for this is that they have like some sort of remaster in the works. I mean, it seems weird that Infamous was kind of lumped in there as well, right? Because disconnected.
No relationship at all. Yeah,
but I'd struggle to see that being the case. I fear it's kind of much more likely to be a licensing quirk or something. Like, I think we think of licensing in terms of music more often than not, but like, I wonder in the case of Resistance if it's like archival footage or like maybe even assets or something that were kind of incorporated in the game. Maybe it was just like simpler rather than paying a bill and extending a license to just kind of remove it from the platform. But I'm sure they look at the numbers all the time and go, okay, realistically, not many people are playing these games. Let's take them off. And maybe it's even kind of like a server capacity sort of issue as well. And it's just the numbers on these are down. Let's get them off. But that does particularly kind of hurt in the case of Resistance because those games are not readily available. There's very few ways to sort of play them. And as someone that kind of wants to play them, it's a bit of like a hole in their kind of history of gaming. And I've got like very kind of, I'm a big fan of Insomniac's work. Like, for me not to have played those games is a bit odd. So it's frustrating. I'd really like a remaster, but yeah, I feel like it's unlikely to be the case.
Yeah. Do you, Ewan, think that this is a particularly bad look on the back of PlayStation recently upping the price of PlayStation Plus pretty much everywhere?
Not particularly these games. I know we're kind of making a feature of discussing these games at the moment, but I don't know if they're really front of mind for the everyday sort of consumer paying for these services. That being said, I think PlayStation do have a bit of an uphill battle in maintaining the quality of their service at the price that they have. Like, I don't think they have a stronger model for it as Xbox do, right? That being said, I think like Game Pass is very competitively priced at the moment and they'll struggle to maintain that as kind of the budgets, especially for these games, keep going up and, you know, they're going to have to pay these acquisitions off at some point as well too. So I suspect that will keep jumping up over time. But yeah, PlayStation, it's already kind of pretty steep, like even for the kind of essential service, right, just to stay connected and online games is pretty steep. And we've kind of seen over time the quality of like the monthly, free monthly games you're getting kind of dropping off, the quantity of them as well. So yeah, it's a bit it's a bit of a tough battle for them. I think they're going to have to be quite careful not to peeve too many people in the process. Was it, did Shannon not say recently that he was considering not even paying for Essential anymore, given he mostly just plays single player games and he didn't think he needed it?
Yeah, like, something like that.
That's pretty telling. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's plenty of people in the same boat. It's $100. Yeah. It's $100 a year. Like, it's not an insignificant amount. So yeah, it is tough. I think PlayStation should be careful about how they continue to prioritize the quality of that service.
Indeed. Well, unlike PlayStation, EB Games seems to place enormous value in game preservation to a degree, in that they're getting back into the secondhand retro software and hardware selling, I suppose, in a big way. James, EB has certainly had a few concepts in recent years geared at generating revenue for the company. Obviously, they've had their subscription service of their own, EB, is it Plus?
Yeah.
EB World Plus. Yeah. Where do you think this sits on that list when you, you know, factor in the fact that they had reward-tiered ramen noodles and things like that?
It's noodle bowls, wasn't it?
That's quite... It depends on...
Yeah. It doesn't matter how they serve. It could be a cup, it could be a bowl. It's still fucking silly.
Anyway, I think having looked at the prices, which are up now for, I think it's 360, Wii, PS2, and PS3.
Could you please, just for the class, just because I haven't looked, can you just illuminate us to some idea of what they're going to sort of be sitting at?
Sure. Let me just look it up on the public website for you right now.
For some reason, please, I just imagined him like pulling out a calculator. And...
yeah. I mean, okay. So like a PS2 Slim console is $178.
Okay.
Okay.
That doesn't seem that bad.
That doesn't seem that bad.
You guys,
not unreasonable.
Me. Give me a game. Give me a PS2 game or a Wii game.
Jack 2 Renegade.
One of my favorite of all time.
Goated.
Jack 2 Renegade.
I guess it depends how deep their library goes. Like, this is going to answer a lot of what the...
Wait. Well, Jack 3 is $12.
That's not what I asked. What's Jack 2?
I can't find Jack 2. So
do they have games like...
no, I guess sweating here.
How rare would they have? Would they have, like, Shadow of the Colossus?
I mean, I'm happy to look at it for you right now. 2 seconds.
Ico? I don't know.
I really should have read.
How deep does the Duffy go?
Shouldn't I?
Nevertheless, what I'm learning here is that it seems to be pretty fairly priced and relatively competitive.
My only concern about this, though, right? Like, so obviously a lot was said about they weren't giving as much for trades, and I had always kind of surmised that meant they wouldn't be selling them for a lot, which I think is reasonable. My big thing now is like, what's just to stop all these like annoying loser collector scabby like scalpers from just buying all this shit up cheap and then making a profit for themselves? I guess you could say that about Pokemon cards as well, though, right? So I guess nothing. But yes, I thought the prices were quite reasonable. I do wonder, like, obviously they haven't put up any like GameCube or before, which I think is obviously naturally a lot rarer. So maybe that stuff might be higher. But for now, like, I think it's pretty good. I don't know if you guys agree or not, but I mean, I have no interest in buying. I own all my physical retro games still, so. But I think if you need to grab a game and you're quick enough, like, it seems to be pretty good.
Ewan might be able to buy a PS3 and Resistance 1 and 2.
He could maybe even buy a PS2 and, like, experience some amazing greatness. Games that he missed out on.
Okay, I have a PS2. I think it still functions. Well,
you don't play SingStar on it, probably, I imagine.
Yeah. I played the shit out of Jack 2 on my PS2. Yeah, I'm glad that this kind of exists, and I think that is probably a fair price for a PS2. I was trying to pull up Facebook Marketplace to see kind of what things were going for on there. That's kind of my barometer for this sort of thing.
Better or worse?
Well, I didn't get too far. Hang on, let me have a quick check. But yeah, I feel presumably there's an element of validation, right, at EB. Like, they would kind of check that these things are kind of working, that like eliminate a lot of the headaches that the kind of second hand market may otherwise have.
And I think that's what I was about to say, is like dealing with somebody on Marketplace. I don't know about you guys, but the price, you can't put a price on that. Not having to deal with people on Facebook Marketplace.
So. Yeah. This came up when we were discussing Nintendo Switch trade-in prices at EB. Like, people saying, oh, I could get way more if I just sold on Facebook Marketplace. Mm. And it's like, yeah, you're welcome to. Go for it. There's nothing to stop you doing that. But it's actually just quite a convenient thing, just, like, walking into an EB and, like, or it's CX. Not a bad deal if you're not, like, prepared to do the work.
Mm. Mm. Harry, the vibes here probably answer this question for me, but how do you think this retro gambit of EBs might hold up in the face of things like eBay and Facebook Marketplace?
I don't know. I think it's going to be very dependent on, like, the quality of these games. I mean, obviously, I think EB will have a lot of people come in wanting to experience old favorites if they still have consoles or they want to buy consoles and stuff. But a lot of the appeal as well is obviously towards retro collectors and people who want to fill out their libraries with games they're missing. And I think for a lot of those people, they want games that are in good condition. You know, the box art is intact and in good condition. It's got the manual and the disc that are both in good condition. So obviously EB, I'm sure, will do their due diligence when it comes to testing discs and making sure that these things work. But in terms of, like, the cosmetic appeal, which I think is a big part of it for collectors, because a lot of people just will buy them to fill out their libraries, not to play. I think that will be a deciding factor for it. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. It has the potential for sure, especially with the pricing. But, yeah, I think the condition of the goods will be a big part of it for a lot of people who are interested.
Indeed. Mm.
How does it work? Presumably someone trades it into a store, it's, like, logged into the system, and then you could buy it online and they would just, like, ship it from wherever? Or does it, like, go back to a...
So, the article that Shannon published today said there's select stores that... So, mainly online, but okay. So select stores will stock as, like, a pilot, I guess, maybe.
Right, okay.
So, I guess if they have, like, shitloads of, I don't know, what I'm trying to think, like, Wii Play, like, that would be a game that I imagine there'd be a lot of copies being traded in. They could ship, like, 3 copies of that each to each store. I don't think it would work differently to how pre-owned works now, right? Like, when you buy a pre-owned game, you might get the cover, you might not, but you're not paying more or less for that. It's just one price.
Yeah.
But Harry is right in that this market is different. I don't know if people, like, naturally care, but like, if they're gonna have tiered pricing for conditions or whatever, or just keep it simple. But if that's the case, it needs to be in store, right? So people can actually look at it rather than order it, get it shipped, and it's, like, a nightmare and they need to ship it back or whatever.
I did find some PlayStation 2 listings on Marketplace, and granted, I'm just kind of working what's, like, available around Melbourne. But prices kind of range from, like, $100 to kind of $230. I think I saw one that was more $150-ish. Granted, a lot of these, like, people were chucking in some games and controllers and stuff as well. But you got to go through the process of going and checking it out and confirming it does.
Hi, is this available? Are you interested?
And if you're spending, like, $150 anyhow, I can see it being pretty tempted to just, like, order one for $20 more on the EB website.
Then you don't have to go anywhere as well.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on from that, we'll have our rapid fire question for the week. It's effectively a quarter of the way through the year. So to, again, basically rip off Kinda Funny content while keeping it brief. What is everyone's current front runner for Game of the Year?
No.
This is such a big question for rapid fire.
Don't overthink it. Mine is out of one or two games that I haven't even finished yet. And you probably know what they are, so. We've discussed them at length already. I'll just say, mine is probably... I'm only probably 2 or 3 hours into Clair Obscur, but I can see that well and truly cementing itself as a front runner if it keeps up what it's doing. But there's also an irresistible pull from Blueprints as well, so... Yeah.
Yeah. God, this is really tough.
You're not committing to anything.
Kind of in my list as it stands at the moment, I did have Split Fiction at the top, but I was really enjoying Avowed, and I wanted to go back and spend more time with that, which might surprise some people. But really what's occupying my brain space at the moment is Blueprints. And it's that being that kind of game that's like just stuck with me more than I thought it would and any other game. I've just kind of spent a lot of time just thinking about the game.
Do you have a notepad?
Usually a sign.
Do you take
I've
notes?
Got like I've got digital notes with like screenshots and photographs of the screen and all sorts.
Shit.
Yeah.
James, what are you thinking?
I'm just looking through the list now. I actually have booked time to play Split Fiction this weekend with my Split Fiction friend. So I haven't played that yet. So probably WWE 2K25.
Great choice.
No, not really. I haven't played Blueprints either, and I really want to. So that is on my list too. So at the moment, just getting to the end of April... Yeah, it's
how many games are on this fucking list?
No, I'm looking at like games that are on Wikipedia.
So you're just thumbing through your reviews on Press Start.
Yeah, no. I also haven't played South of Midnight yet, though I don't think that'll be.
Oh,
it,
true. But I forgot about South of Midnight. Shit.
Another game I'm really enjoying. I don't think it's up there for me though.
Also haven't played Avowed. Fuck, I'm really behind. I'm gonna go with right now. Clair Obscur. Before that, it was Kingdom Come Deliverance.
Mm.
I have... Actually, no, I'm not going to talk about that. Yes, that's... Let's go with those two.
Harry.
Yeah, Blueprints was a front runner for me, and it really fell off towards the end.
Oh, no.
At least in my... I just think... the RNG stuff really frustrated me.
Apparently, there's two ends. That's where it's losing. Have you heard that? Are you past the first end?
Have you heard this? I've run credits. Anyway.
But after that,
Sorry?
Apparently, there's two ends. Like,
yeah,
the credits
I'm not,
is
I'm
not
playing anymore past what
this
I...
This is meant to be rapid fire.
Okay.
Stressing me out.
Yeah. Split Fiction for me. No question.
Split Fiction.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, dynamic.
Oh, wow. Rather diverse four from us there. Well, what I hope is Harry's list of games for What the Wiki, which is the Press Start podcast game show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and the contestants must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, and the round ends after one person scores 2 points. As last week's winner, who clean swept Shannon under the table, Harry got 3 points on the board, and he is in the hosting chair this week. Just to recap the scores. Now, I think these are right, because I pulled them from a doc... before last week's episode, Ewan's reception was trash, so he couldn't help me out. I think I'm on 13. I think Ewan's on 12. I think James is on 9. Shannon's on 5. And Harry got himself 3 points last week. So, look, we can do an audit later. Redisperse points if need be. But I think
so
that's
no
where
one got
we're
points
at.
Last week, but
Just Harry
right?
for 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Shannon tried to answer a game 6 times and expected to get the point, and that wasn't happening.
Oh my god, how... That was dreadful.
That was obnoxious.
He's not here. I shouldn't...
We'll talk bad about someone.
Not at all.
Nevertheless, it is Harry's turn to host, so please.
All right, take it away. Ready?
Yes.
All right. The game isn't... All right, James. The game is an action platform video game developed by a studio and published by... a publisher. It is a sequel to a game that came out in 2020. Okay. The Ewan? Studio... Okay, Ewan.
2020. I'm taking... Is it Split Fiction?
No.
Damn. James.
Yes, James.
Is it Death Stranding 2 on the beach?
No.
Okay. Action platformer.
It's got... It depends on how you play it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, anyway. I get free reign at the rest of this paragraph.
Shit, yeah.
Oh, have we lost Harry?
I think so.
Oh, no.
He looks happy about that.
Universe.
Yeah.
He looks happy.
He does, yeah.
I'm going to take a
They won't see that on the edited version.
Oh, that's a shame.
Frozen smiley face. It'll just be a black box.
Look, I feared this may happen.
Do you know what game I have been enjoying recently as well? Thinking about my game of the year list. I went back to Lords of the Fallen with the update, and it's like I would fall out of contention, I think, for game of the year, given this it's just a 2.0 update, but really enjoying that game. Co-op added to Souls like just does something for me.
I think it already had co-op games. For what it's worth.
Yeah, but like this seamless
progression-y
one. You know what I mean.
I do. I just want to be a dickhead. Yeah, I actually bought it. I think I got it from EV for like $28. So I was like,
oh, really?
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
Yeah, why not? Let's see how we go. What else? Yeah, I don't know.
What else? I thought we were going to say more about it than that.
No, that's it. I haven't actually played it. Of course, I'm probably not ever going to play it. I'll trade it in for $10 in a year. That's how my life works.
And put it towards a PS2.
Yeah, no. I've got... Anyway.
James would have several. Go on, propping his door open.
If you... I'm going to continue to vamp. If you were to fire up your PS2 nowadays, what game would you play?
That's a really silly question. Actually, no, it's not. Resident what do you Evil. Think I would... No, no. PS2 didn't have many good Resident Evil.
Onimusha.
No.
Ooh.
Devil May Cry.
Actually, no, it's got to be a game that's only on PS2.
Okay.
Because otherwise I could just play it. Yeah, I'm going to go...
Onimusha 3.
Is this going to be in the episode?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Why? Are you shaping your answer around that?
I have to really think about that. Nah,
mine would be A Dog's Life. Did you ever play A Dog's Life?
I did. I remember I used to rent it all the time. It was, and I don't know why.
Garbage. But I love the shit
out
of it.
I don't think it was. I think it was pretty popular. Garbage.
It was before its time.
No, I don't know if it's before. I think it was just of its time. Not before its time.
How much is that?
Answer your question, Ewan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't looked. PS2. PS2 only games. My gut says...
A Dog's Life.
A Dog's Life, yeah.
Sorry, I'm still hung up on this. I'm trying to Google it. Oh, okay.
You can't...
Oh,
you
just
really
Dog's
can't...
Life.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Don't worry about it. All good.
I might have been mixing it up with A Bug's Life.
My games are literally out there. I want to go look. But I'm going to say Silent Hill 3.
Harry is saying, just for the update, is that his net crashed and it won't let him back in the room for some reason.
Oh.
Oh, no. So you are able to see to that, perhaps?
Is it open in another tab? Or something like that? Did he kind of close his browser, maybe? Whether or not I leave this in, I don't know. Maybe we just let everyone peer behind the questions as we do some technical... solve
have
some
that
technical
little
difficulties.
Technical difficulty thing splash up.
This is the worst time for this to happen. Especially
I mean, we're really
crazy.
In the juicy part of the episode. If you're like listening at this point, you are a What the Wiki diehard and you will power through
Hello,
listening to this dribble no matter what.
It's good to see you here, White Monkey. Thanks for coming.
One of our faves. Where... I don't have any like pop-ups in the studio.
Phil Wood, 1788, probably bounced out. He got a.
Oh, hang on. Here we go.
He's back. Oh, he's in a different room.
He's in a different room.
Sorry.
Wow, that's very dynamic.
I'm wired now.
He's changed backgrounds.
Yeah, it's like blueprints, but like in real life.
We did make a joke about you slipping into another universe, and it feels like you have.
Yeah, that's what it felt like for a second. I'm hardwired now. Internet seemed to have crashed. But sorry, someone put their hand
now. These two were just incorrectly guessed, and then I had the rest of the paragraph. So
that's not how I remember it.
That is how it happened. Yeah. So please, right. Wherever you left off.
Okay. The studio, which is based in Poland, served as the game's developer. The game director described the game as an evolution of the original. While it was designed to be challenging, the team introduced various gameplay enhancements to make it more approachable to new players. For instance, the team introduced an active blocking mechanic for players who were struggling with the game's fast movement system.
Ewan, I'm buzzing back in so hard.
Yes, Ewan.
Can I? Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Is this Ghost Runner 2?
It is Ghost Runner 2.
Well done, Ewan.
Very good. All right, 1 point to Ewan.
My mind did not go there at all.
All right. The second game is a 2014 action-adventure stealth video game. It is the eighth game in the series, directed, written, and designed by a well-known game developer, and serves as a prologue to its, what I guess would be a sequel
Ewan.
Game. Yes, Ewan.
Is this Metal Gear Solid
Fuck off.
5 Ground Zeroes?
It is.
Huge.
Clean
Let's
sweep
go!
From Ewan.
Wow. That is
what
such
is
a James
happening?
Game.
What
Didn't even
fuck?
Need the other two games.
Dude, I wasn't sure I had it until James went fuck off. I was like, is this right? Maybe I'm not crazy.
Snapped up.
Huge result. All right, sorry, I forgot I was hosting for a second. So that takes
I was like, I need to score check
in the game.
That takes Ewan up to 15 points, two clear of the lead now. Huge, and this is shit for me because I won't be on next week because I'm jetting off somewhere. But yeah,
oh really?
Very good. Yeah, that's dynamic. Yeah. So well done, Ewan. Need I say more? With that, let's bring an end to this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at PressStartAU and visit the site at PressStart.com.au. We've been joined today by Ewan, taking home the points.
Thank you for having me, Brody.
Please, it's been lovely.
I haven't really written anything to promote recently, but I'll see you next week. Will I be back in the hosting chair?
Who knows? You won't see me next week. I just said that. Yeah.
I think we should.
Well, you'll see the viewers next week. Yeah.
We might. Anyway. Yeah.
We've also been joined by Harry, dealing out the points.
Yes. You can follow me on X at Harry_Kello and other things like Instagram.
Lovely. And James, who didn't get anywhere near the points.
Anyway.
Sorry. Was that unnecessary?
Incredibly unnecessary. You can find me on X, I guess, at James, ATJMZ, or you can just like Google me and find me elsewhere because it's really hard to talk about Blue Sky, like without a cool name. So,
and depending on when the dates fall and when podcasts are next week, either look out for James's Death Stranding 2 stuff or he'll shill that stuff next week on the podcast anyway. But either way, keep an eye out.
We should actually we'll talk about that after.
Ooh, leave a little tease.
No, I don't have a tease. I just think Brody should be here if we're talking about it.
Well, so that's unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it's going to line up.
No, but it might. Anyway, we'll talk about it after. Let's go. Let's finish this. The people have been here for an hour.
Peaks like, behind the curtain this episode.
After I was told I kept it nice and tight last week, this one has blown right out.
Sloppy and loose.
This is sloppy seconds for me. I've been your host, Brody. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, happy gaming. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.